everyone, and welcome to Qualitative Conversations, a podcast series hosted by the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group of the American Educational Research Association. I'm Stephanie Ann Shelton, a guest host for this episode on collaboration and co-authorship. And I'm excited to be joined today by my brilliant co-authors of a wonderful article, Crystal Flantroy, Kiara Somerville, Erica Campbell, and Ashley Prowell. And so, Kiara, if we could just introduce yourselves, maybe in author order. So Kiara, then Erica, then Crystal, then Ashley, and then we'll get started.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kiara Somerville, Dr. Kiara Somerville, a recent graduate of the Higher Education Administration Program at the University of Alabama. I currently work in the Division of Student Life at the University of Alabama, and so certainly a scholar practitioner in every sense of the word, and I am excited to be here with you all.
Hello, everybody. My name is Erica Campbell, and I am a PhD candidate in the Higher Education Administration Program at the University of Alabama. And I'm excited because I will be graduating in May, as I will be defending my dissertation this January. So I'm excited to be on the job market looking for faculty positions. And like Kiara, I am a scholar practitioner, student affairs professional, but I want to take that to the faculty route. So I'm excited to be here with you all today.
My name is Crystal Flantroy, and I'm currently a PhD candidate in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that I graduate in July. I, too, am a scholar practitioner who has found her way back to a classroom teaching position, and so I'm back to teaching high school science, which is something I love and love to do, but we'll see how it all works out in the end.
My name is Ashley Prowell, or Dr. Ashley Prowell. And I am also a recent graduate of the social work department PhD program. I'm also on the job market, hoping to enter the professoriate and continue to do research and teaching. So yeah, I'm glad we didn't have to like run down our research topic because I'm so tired of writing about it and talking about it with everybody. So. So we're here today to talk about your article that was published in the Qualitative Research Journal, and it is titled Finding Ourselves as Black Women in Eurocentric Theory, Collaborative Biography on Learning Qualitative Inquiry. And so I wanted to start by asking if you could share how this project got started. What initiated the ideas that ultimately led to this article?
As it turns out, this project got started in, it feels like a group chat, right? We would have class and then we would all leave class and talk in the parking lot before we all went to our cars. That led to a group chat of where we got to talk about things that we didn't understand, things that we just didn't relate to, things that were confusing in the readings of the theory that we were reading in Qual 3. And it kind of flourished from there.
Right. We, as Crystal mentioned, were, you know, talking about frustrations and confusion that went along with this qualitative course that we were taking. And we thought about it one day. I think we were actually in the classroom after class one day and had this thought like, well, maybe we should write about this, right? Mm-hmm. We all have a lot of thoughts about this and, you know, about our experience in that classroom and understanding the material and working together to make the material make sense to each other. We leaned on each other heavily for that. So we told ourselves, like, how about we just write about this, right? And I know we'll probably get to this in a little bit, but we thought, you know, Dr. Shelton would be a wonderful person to talk to about these thoughts and to see if we can get something going.
So that's a perfect transition. So could you talk through how you started the process of co-authoring this paper? What did that process look like?
I mean, I want to say it was just, you know, just it just happened pretty naturally. I mean, like Crystal said, it started out in a group chat and we all had these same thoughts about what was going on in the classroom. So, I mean, I don't know if you're talking about like the ordering of authorship and how that happened, but I think just in terms of us all, you know, being engaged in this topic and wanting to instead of just kind of I guess, complaining about it or griping about it, wanted to be productive and turn it into something creative and productive for academia. And I feel like since we've written this paper, like if you just scroll through academic Twitter, you'll see like, you know, a lot of people are talking about this similar ideas these days and kind of this incorporation of Black thought or Black, you know, ideas into, you know, our readings in the classroom and just being more inclusive overall and responsive to other cultures. So I feel like we were definitely at the forefront. Maybe we weren't, but it definitely feels good that, you know, we're seeing more people talk about this issue in doctoral programs and just overall in higher education.
Right. And I will also add that one of the things that we did, too, because we knew that we had material to write about or to share our personal narratives of what that looked like in the classroom, I also believe that we went to you, Dr. Shelton, to be honest, and we said, you know, we have this idea just to kind of really just dive in about what our, you know, Black feminist thought is, and then also to really think about how we use that with qualitative research or qualitative philosophical understandings. And so you gave us the idea in terms of the methodology to really just think about how we could use that as an opportunity to kind of collaborate when it comes to our narrative. And I know we'll get to that in a little bit later, I'm sure. But that's where kind of the idea got the wheels to kind of get moving. That, you know what, this is qualitative research, what our narratives are, what our experiences are in that classroom, and you kind of gave us some wheels with the methodology with that.
And I guess, you know, earlier on, I think we also had the conversation of, you know, or at least I know I brought this up and shared it with the group, just this idea of choosing a white professor to be engaged with our scholarship or this manuscript that we were writing. And I know while Dr. Shelton tends to be very open and or is very open and often probably even can relate to a lot of the issues that we talk about in our paper or some of them, I think we chose Dr. Shelton because of that openness. But I do think, you know, we did think about like what would the paper, how would things look different if we engage with an African-American or a Black a professor? And I do think there are implications for that. I think would she have been involved in our group chat or, you know, how would that have changed things in terms of our findings and how we engage with the content throughout the course semester? So I think that is something that, you know, we should, I don't know if y'all want to share your own thoughts about that, but that I know that's something that we brought up earlier on.
But I also think that we were a bit treading lightly as we began, because we also were still in a class with a professor whose course we were really critiquing for something that we thought was missing, that was something essential. And so it felt like, are we really going to write about this? Because truly enough, I mean, we've all been taught by her. We're sitting in her course, and it's like, how do we, you know, levy this heavy critique on the course that we've been in without feeling weird about it? So that was another thing.
So you brought up some of these. The next question is really looking at like some of the challenges. And so I think that these are definitely some that are really important. And I'm glad that, Ashley, you initiated some of these concerns, because I think they're very important. Mm-hmm. And thinking about like collaboratively writing and then trying to go through this publication process, because I feel like a lot of times for graduate students, publication seems like more of like an abstract concept than some sort of reality. Mm-hmm. And so what were some of the challenges of the collaborative writing and the publication process when you were working through this article?
I don't know that when we actually started writing together and sharing our narratives with each other, that wasn't necessarily tough for me. I think on the front end, we had to learn the methodology. And that was something that we had to kind of sit with, because I think even with the methodology and, you know, the philosophers that we were attributing and citing in our methodology were themselves white men, right? And so we talked about how, you know, we were critiquing this use of using white philosophers in these courses, but we are in fact using them for this paper. We talked about how we were turning it on its head, right? To make it work for us, which is really the nature of the whole paper, the theme of the whole paper, making what we were learning in that class, make it make sense to us. So I think learning the methodology at first was something that we had to understand. But the actual writing of the narrative seemed to come quite naturally for me. Ladies, I'm not sure how you all felt about that.
And I will say that it actually became natural for me because we had been in that class and really was in that space and really sitting with our thoughts about those white philosophers in that course. I really felt like, you know, this was my opportunity to really get that off my chest in a writing format, right? But then also, because we were doing it in a collaborative manner, I think what really helped me too was that, okay, I'm not the only person that's talking about this, right? So, you know, often as a Black woman, you know, we feel good in numbers. We feel good having that sisterhood support. And I think knowing that we were collaborating but also writing our own narratives at the same time made me feel empowered to just say what I needed to say and just express myself because I knew there were other women who would be doing the same thing. And so that really empowered me and it felt very natural for myself.
Yeah. And I think we brought this up in the paper too, is just this idea of like earlier on, like, hold on, are we missing something? Like just trying to think back through before you you write about something or talk about something, you want to make sure you have the, I think naturally like have the facts, right? So just thinking through the course and I guess also in a way of not to be offensive towards the qualitative program that we were taking these courses in and just really thinking about, you know, if there was something that we didn't grasp or something that we missed throughout the course. And I think like Erica was saying, like other people are, you know, once we realized collectively that we had these shared thoughts and that other people are also talking about this, I think that helped us feel better about moving forward with writing about it.
I just wanted to add, when we went to our first, like we put a conference paper, like, I can't remember which one it is. Is it ICQI, right? And so we go and we do our presentation and we're sitting in this room of people and like people were enlightened and moved by it. And it was like, wait, y'all, I think we got something. And like when we left there, we knew we felt better. Like people came up and talked to us after our presentation. It was like, oh, okay, this is it. All right. And so I think that part of it, like putting in conference presentations to ICQI and to AERA, you know, made a world of difference because what it said was, is that scholars in the world want to hear what we had to say about this particular topic, which made moving the work forward a little bit easier. The trepidation wasn't there anymore. It was like, okay, this is something we can talk about that we need to talk about.
So Erica and Crystal kind of alluded to this, but I wanted to ask in case you had anything else you wanted to add, what were some of the high points or the advantages of collaboratively writing and a collaborative publishing process?
I think, I guess just piggybacking off of what we just talked about was just this idea of, okay, this is something, you know, kind of new for us and that we're, you know, this is our first time writing about something like this, but being able to kind of figure it out through our collaborative narrative and responding to each other and going back and forth with that process. I think that was something interesting and just kind of figuring it out as we went, you know, so I thought that was cool.
I think Kiera said this earlier, and there is power in numbers, right? And having people to work with and having people to bounce ideas off of and having people that have maybe more experiences or with publishing because we were all in different parts of our journey at that point. And so we are, you know, it was it made the experience a lot easier, but it also made it tougher, right? Because you're working with four different people with five different people with five different schedules.
I think it might be worth you talking a little bit, going back a little bit to the to some of the challenges. If I recall correctly, some of the ways that you all wrote the paper was you initially you divvied up sections. You did the narratives collaboratively throughout, but then you divvied up other sections. But then there had to be a process where the paper became unified. And so I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but I think that that was definitely a very interesting part of the process that it could be useful for other people to hear about.
So that's a good point. One thing that we did, so after, like Kiera mentioned earlier, we had to really learn and really understand this methodology, right? So that's always key and important before you put yourself out there to try it and do it. And of course, you even learn through the process, and of course you learn after the process. I mean, that's part of qualitative research and what we are, tasked to do as good researchers. But one thing that we did first is we decided that we would divvy up our narratives. And so one person will write their own personal narrative. Each person wrote a personal narrative, right? But then we decided that we would go back and then respond to each person's narrative. And so in each person's narrative, it might be a thought that Ashley said or a thought that Crystal or Keeter said. And then I might interrupt with my communication or a thought of like, yes, like when you said you were in class and maybe you didn't understand this philosopher, I would respond by saying something like, you know what? I didn't understand that either, right? And so it kind of created not just only our own narratives to be able to get that narrative on paper, but it allowed us to, for lack of a better word, to interrupt each other and kind of have a conversation back and forth through our written narrative. And so we did that using a Google Drive. And from there is where we used that just to move forward in our analysis.
And I think when it came time to piece the paper together, it's not really a challenge. It wasn't a challenge, I don't think. We leaned on each other's strengths to kind of understand, kind of what sections of the paper. So, for instance, I had some previous experience with the conceptual framework, right? So it was, easy for me to feel like I could step up and say, okay, y'all, I feel like I can write this conceptual framework. Erica knows I joke about this a lot. I feel like I do really well with tying things with a bow and concluding. So I was like, I'm happy to conclude as well. And then, we talked about who would focus on the literature review and who would focus on, our data and creating themes from our narratives. And so that part, it's really nice to lean on each other's strengths in that way to piece the paper together.
Yeah. And I think we were all at different points in our, of course, in our PhD journey. So, especially when it came to authorship, I knew for myself, at least, that I was kind of in the bulk of my dissertation and that I wouldn't have a ton of time to commit to the final pieces of the manuscript. So I'm, of course, second to last author. And I think other people may have, chosen their authorship similarly. So, in terms of, we tried to be fair, there were multiple opportunities that came out of the paper, like we were saying conference presentation. So we each had opportunities to kind of lead those projects along the way while we were at different points. So for ICQI, I was at a easier time in my PhD journey. So I did get a chance to lead that a little bit in terms of submitting the proposal for ICQI and everything. And I think Crystal did you did AERA, you led that proposal.
Yeah, I led the AERA.
It was canceled. Yeah.
But AERA got canceled thanks to COVID. So there was a lot of work for, I won't say for no reason, but for no reason.
And I think that speaks to us feeling like, we can take this on the road and we can really make this a worthwhile project. So, even though AERA was canceled because of COVID, and it was 2020 when we got accepted, it still helped us to make us feel like, you know what, this project is worthwhile. And this is something that we should definitely, even though, you know, hell was breaking loose in the country, in the world, we still felt like this this research still needed to go forward. And I'm glad that we continue to push towards wrapping this paper up.
So many grad students are likely to listen to this podcast. And so in channeling a graduate student perspective, which for some of you is current, for others of you, it's in the rearview mirror, but not too long ago, in channeling a graduate student perspective, what was the publishing process like? And what do you wish that you'd known beforehand that you know now?
I wish I had known that those jokes about reviewer number two were actually really serious and not jokes. There are such extremes on what reviewers want out of your paper. And oh, I do remember what I wanted to say. The unifying part of the paper. Dr. Shelton really helped with our language. That was what I really wanted to say. And helping it all pull together so it was concise and consistent, even though we all have different words and different styles of writing. But yes, reviewer number two. That is exactly the truth. When I looked at our reviews for the paper, it was like one person was like, oh, okay, here are these few things. And then somebody else is like, well, I think you should look at this, this, and this from these people. I think you guys missed it. And we're like.
And then not even being able to find some of their suggestions. Like, it was really hard because maybe our institution didn't have access to it. And then having to figure out if we were going to include it or not. And if we didn't include it, how to word that in the letter back to the editors or the reviewers, how to say, you know, thank you, but no thank you.
Yeah, my advice for that is just in overall publishing experience is just like trying to respond to everything and making it seem like, you know, I'm so grateful for this feedback and but or however, you know, that's the way to approach it. But, you know, trying your best to still address each and every comment as much as possible. But if it's not in line with what you're trying to do or your goal or aims for the for your work, then, you know, saying that and being honest about that.
Honestly, I think we were really blessed. We had Dr. Shelton, the great Dr. Shelton, on our team. And so because Dr. Shelton, you were on our team, as we thank you all the time, it really helped us walk through that publication process. So I've been a part of some publications in my past experience prior to this research, but really having an understanding of how everything breaks down, how you respond to the journal, how you respond to each of their, you know, suggested edits. That was something that was really eye-opening for me because now, because we did that and because you walked us through that process so that we can understand that, I feel more confident just putting in other manuscripts at other journals. You know, it just made me really see the process from start to finish and not just kind of a small portion of the process. And so I'm thankful for that. But also it really, if we had to tell graduate students what to do, find a coach, find a mentor, find someone who will help you walk through that process because that kind of takes a lot of strain and stress off of the manuscript writing and journal process. And so that was very helpful for me. And I'm sure my colleagues will say the same.
And I would say too, just being on the job market right now, I'm starting to realize what a valuable experience this was. And not that either of us were, you know, being aggressive about, you know, collaboration. We have to collaborate. I think this for us, thankfully, it happened very, very naturally. And I think that is something to cherish, whether it happens in your PhD career or later on in your career. But you'll find, I think, when applying to jobs and kind of thinking through your entire journey, that experiences like this are really useful because you will be required to collaborate interdisciplinary. And for me, I'm in the social work program, and I think most of these co-authors or these gals here are in education. So I think that was a great experience, and I think it's something that just share, being honest and sharing your thoughts about a course experience or things that are going on in your own research or your own research area of interest, sharing that with others, Dr. Shelton, sharing that with others and just kind of seeing where that where that takes you rather than, you know, making it a point to, you know, collaborate, just kind of surrounding yourself with people of shared interests. And I think it'll just happen naturally.
I do want to accentuate, because of some of the things that you all have said, I want to make it really clear to anyone who would listen to the podcast that you all did the work. You all responded to the reviewers, you all did the revisions, because I don't want to give anyone the misguided impression that like I was in charge of anything or I took over. Y'all did the work. And so I want to make sure that relative to Erica's note about, you know, find yourself a mentor, I think that's a really great piece of advice for any graduate students or even early career faculty, but making sure that you find someone who helps you to understand how to do it and helps to highlight you, not someone who jumps in and takes credit for what it is that you're planning on doing. Mm-hmm. Because that's not what happened. These women, these brilliant scholars did this work. Mm-hmm. This article is there.
Dr. Shelton, I'm thinking about how you helped us kind of understand the landscape of qualitative research journals and where this might fit best in timelines. And, you know, I'm thinking along those lines when Erica said, you know, a coach, a mentor to help us understand, you know, the scope of what we were working with in terms of submitting to a journal and what that looked like and keeping us on a timeline, a schedule, or, you know, if we fell off, encouraging us to hop back on that timeline. That mm-hmm. was very, very helpful for us.
I do want to speak to the publishing process, and Kiara brought this up. I think that there are a multitude of journals in which you can publish, and being able to select a journal that is interested in your topic and will find your topic relevant, I think that would be a struggle for every graduate student. Like, because you know you're supposed to try to shoot for like top tier journals. But as a graduate student, you're like, okay, I'm not really sure which journals I should shoot for. And having Dr. Shelton help us with that and a realistic timeline, right? Like, we wanted to turn our paper around in, you know, 6 months to a year, not 18 months, depending on the journal, as we go back and forth and back and forth. And so that was something I didn't realize in the process of writing and publishing, that like where you publish can determine how often you're published, you know, mm-hmm. the turnaround, the editors, what they like, if you fit, like all of those things matter. And so like the mentoring on that was amazing.
Well, because you're all gifted and talented, you've answered multiple questions that I haven't asked yet. So thanks for being amazing in that way. If you could rewind time and do this entire process all over again, what might you do differently?
You know, I'm one of those people that's like, I have no regrets. And the reason why I have no regrets right now when it comes to this project is because it was my first time doing a collaborative article with majority of my peers and colleagues, and of course, with your assistant, Dr. Shelton. But then also, just because I feel like you don't learn until you just do something, right? And so that's kind of how you learn the good things, like we were saying, you know, the good things of how to pick a journal article, how to really dive into a methodology that you have never done before, how to, you know, just collaborate and really share the work and just do that effectively and share your part. I think those are the areas that I would have not learned if we didn't just do this project overall. So I would say no regrets. I don't have anything that I would change. I know we were in the midst of COVID. If we can change the world, we would change COVID happening, because that did affect us finishing our paper. Like, we wanted to finish it earlier, but because of COVID, I think that kind of just shook up our timeline a lot. And so I think that was something that I would say, if we had control over the world, I would make a change to. But other than that, really enjoyed this process as it was.
Yeah, I think the pause that we all took when you asked that question, Dr. Shelton, is a testament to, you know, I don't know that I have any regrets either. you know, about the process, and I learned a lot. And even, you know, I wrote another book chapter after this one, and Erica's a co-author on that book chapter with me, and we used the same method, right? And so to be able to go to our co-author who's not on this call and to say, you know, we've done this, this is what we learned from this mm-hmm. paper that we did, you know, prior to this, was helpful, mm-hmm. very, very helpful.
Yeah, I think going into it, just knowing like it's not going to always be perfect. And I know whether you're working with a group or by yourself and publishing, you know, putting your work out there, it's pretty scary. And as soon as, you know, you get that email saying that your paper has been published, you know, for me, I get this like deep sense of fear, like, oh my gosh, people are going to be reading this now. Like they're going to think I'm so stupid. But just know it going into it and knowing that you can always return to the same issue and improve upon it and build upon it and continue doing the work in that way. I think that's something that graduate students should definitely keep in mind. And it's qualitative research, you know, it's so flexible. You can do that, so.
I think I'm with Erica. If I were to rewind time, I would probably just change the circumstances under which like our publication kind of happened. But you can't like change worldwide events. You can't really predict a pandemic. But I also think that like the things that I walk away learning from this is like you can work with different people in different fields, because when you're doing that, like you are using all of the knowledge. Like all of us are in different fields, right? I'm in education, like for like secondary curriculum and instruction. And then we got Erica and Kier who in higher education and Ashley who is in social work. Like we collectively all felt the same way about the course that we were in. And so it was interdisciplinary and it wasn't really about one person or another. It's like, this is a project that I would have never thought that we would have stumbled upon mm-hmm. just from a group chat, right? And so I think the rewind is like, if we could just rewind back in time, I probably would love to go back and be actually able to capture some of those conversations that we were having in a parking lot.
Yeah, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, like, you know how you're having these conversations, and you're going back and forth, and you're talking about these particular articles, and, like, I do remember one day, I read an article, like, 3 times, I had no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, and, like, I came in, I was like, y'all, I read it 3 times, I have no, it's like words on paper, it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But it's like, for me, the rewind would be to look at that as, like, data. Right? Like if we could go back and just collect, like capture some of those like intimate moments that were just what we thought were just conversations. Mm. And if we could capture that, that would probably be the only thing that I would change. Like I want those, that raw interaction that we had initially.
Y'all have answered tons of questions that I've asked. And so what questions might you have for me?
How did you enjoy this process working with us, Dr. Shelton? How did you enjoy working with students of yours who, you know, really appreciate and are thankful for your mentorship and coaching in this process?
And to piggyback on that, to add to that, like how, like being in it and kind of disrupting it. So you are a part of a professor within the qualitative department. So being in it and also kind of helping to disrupt at the same time, if you can talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah, I think those are both really good questions. So, I mean, for me, this is going to sound really cliche, but I don't mean it that way. It was genuinely an honor. It was very touching to me that you came to me and asked if I would help support you in moving this forward. The answer was, of course, I will, you know, let's figure out how to do it. But it also was scary because to go back to Ashley's point, like I'm very aware of the fact that like, I'm a white person. And I do not have the perspectives that you are describing. I do not know the experiences, that needed to be a core part of this paper. And so working to be very deliberate about making sure that you were always in charge, that, you know, my role was never to take over because that was already the problem, right? Like that was already the problem, that white people were silencing Black women, that white people were, you know, a pervasive voice in qualitative research. And so to not duplicate the very problem that was being critiqued. And then in terms of, like, you're right, the article was specifically about the program that I teach in. This article changed the way that I teach in a lot of different ways. I became much more deliberate about making sure that the experiences that you describe, like, didn't happen again if I could help it. And I use your article in the class. Students this semester read your article. But we've implemented, like, specific pedagogical frameworks that the students are aware of, the students read with me, that are specifically targeted at rejecting the status quo, rejecting these Eurocentric, white-centric norms, and really taking the field of qualitative research to task about the ways that it's duplicated, the very oppressions that it sometimes pretends to critique. And so this process, it was helpful for me, just because I felt like there was an inordinate amount of trust in me helping to guide this process and mentor you. But it was important for me professionally and scholastically as well, because it's changed a lot of the way that I think about things, because I'm never so arrogant as to believe that I know everything. But it was a very explicit moment where the process that you were going through forced me to also actively interrogate the ways that I was potentially contributing to the very things that were being described. And so making sure that I was disrupting that as much as I was able to as well.
And I appreciate, Dr. Shelton, you amplifying our voices in your class. You know, I had multiple folks in that class you taught reach out afterwards. We read your paper in class tonight. Oh my God, we read your, and I think even Bowden tweeted about it, you know, us being his friends, and he read our paper. So I appreciate you including that in your course, this paper in your course, and using it as a tool to help your students learn or think critically about, you know, pedagogy in qualitative research, and really, you know, any field that those students will go on to work with.
I appreciate y'all producing scholarship that helps that to be something that can be explicitly addressed.
I do have a question. So you worked with us because we basically were like, hey, we want to write this paper. Do you think in the future that you could see yourself collaborating with students more, like maybe a project, if, like how you've included us into your curriculum, into your pedagogy, in your course, like maybe having a group project where they do something collaborative, and if they see something coming out of it, doing this again with another set of students, possibly?
So I write with students a lot. Anybody who looks at my CV, there's a little symbol that I use to designate when I write with students. I write with students a lot, but the answer to your question is yes. I actually, because this is an ARA qualitative SIG podcast, Bowden and I are actually involved in an ARA grant project right now that is a group of qualitative students, and we anticipate there being multiple collaborative writing projects that come out of that. It's not that I've never done what you all proposed doing ever before, but I do think that the process with you has helped to refine and reflect on that process, to continue to make sure that what's happening is useful and helpful to graduate students. Because it's really easy. The stakes are different for y'all than they are for faculty, right? Like, I mean, you, like Ashley, you talked about at the very beginning when you introduced yourself, like I'm on the job market. And so the stakes are different. The calculus is different. And so making sure that what's happening is useful to y'all, and not just you being a means to an end for a faculty member. All right, to wind up, my favorite question, as you all know, what else would you like to share with graduate students, faculty, or other listeners?
I would say go for it. If you have a project in mind, a manuscript in mind, or just have been pondering on some things when you're in the classroom or in your graduate student experience, or even as a faculty, right? Go for it. You know, try to put it out there. Think about how that can really influence higher education and push our field forward. Don't be afraid to step out and try. Don't be afraid to ask your colleagues if this is something that you think is worthwhile, and to go for it. And then also, like we said earlier, definitely seek out mentorship, seek out coaching. If you don't know how to kind of make those steps in terms of manuscript writing. Don't feel free to ask someone. I know it's like a fear that many of us kind of can overcome us as we're graduate students and kind of feel like we don't want to bother our faculty members and we don't really want to ask questions, but feel free to do that. You know, get out of your comfort zone, ask those questions, you know, ask for coaching, ask for mentorship, and you never know what beautiful piece may come from that. So that's some of the advice that I would give.
I think in terms of collaboration, just also, you know, I think people tend to be afraid to work in groups sometimes. It just depends on your personality. Some people like would rather work alone and some people actually enjoy working with groups. But if you're, you know, afraid of that, just being, I think for us, it was a little bit easier because we were all friends. But just so being honest about kind of where we were at in our journey and what we had time for and okay, I can take on this and I can't, you know, just being honest and upfront about that. And I think that tends to help the process go smoother.
In our paper, we talk about, we cite Patricia Hill Collins in one of her 1986 essays, and we talked about how we used our marginality as an excitement to creativity. And so my thoughts for anyone, students, faculty, other listeners is, you know, the four of us, we could have just continued on about our way and maybe continued to complain. Maybe, I don't know what we would have done if we wouldn't have done this paper, but we could have just went on, finished that class that semester and just kept going in our journeys. But we decided, like Ashley said earlier, to use our thoughts in a scholarly way. And that helped us, right, get a publication, but it helped us to, you know, streamline our thoughts. And even thinking about this conversation, it's helping us to give back to qualitative research in the field of education and, you know, really academia, you know, all the things, giving back by nature of sharing our experience, feeling like we were not getting it in that class and having to use, you know, our marginality as an excitement to creativity, to this creative work that we've put out into the world. So that would be my advice and to listeners, is to think about what Hill Collins said and using that marginality to be creative with it and help yourself too, while also helping others, which in a lot of ways is kind of the foundation of Black feminist epistemology in the first place, creating a gateway and an entryway for all folks by nature of, you know, our own position as Black women.
And I just want to challenge graduate students, faculty, and other people who are listening to be the change makers, right? Be the people that disrupt the normal pedagogical policies that we see in qualitative inquiry, right? You don't have to cover the people in the book. You can go out and research and dig deep and try to diversify what it is that you have been doing and what it is you have been learning about. If you have a thought in your head, it might be a theorist that already said it, thought it up, and go research that person, go follow that person, go use that person's scholarship to help propel yourself forward. And so I just want to challenge people to think outside the box and dig deep and help your students to dig deep beyond what's on the surface or beyond what's Eurocentric and what's been normalized for us. So,
yeah, I think it's a testament to Collins' theory is like disrupting and kind of her outsider within theory, just disrupting and navigating the system, but also being able to disrupt it at the same time. So I feel like that's what we did with our paper. I feel like that's what Dr. Shelton was doing by helping us. So, yeah.
All right, so Dr. Kiara Somerville and the future Dr. Eric Campbell and the future Dr. Crystal Flantroy and Dr. Ashley Prowell, thank you very much for joining us today for Qualitative Conversations.
Thank you guys for having us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.